Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the AFC South, all things Tennessee Titans as well. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Nate and TD, and Talking with TD. TD, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Hey, what's going on, man? The sun is shining. It's still in the teens, but it's all good, man. I woke up, so I won.
That's right. TD's about to bring the heat here on the program here today, like he does each and every week. And TD, let's start with the news of the day from yesterday. Carson Wentz traded from Philadelphia to the Colts. What do you think of that move for the Colts, and what do you think that does for the landscape of the AFC South?
Yeah, it's a good move for the Colts. I think it's something that you have to look at as a high risk, which typically offers the chance for a high reward. So it's a solid option for them. I think when you look at the optics of it, as far as having Press Taylor in place as a pass game coordinator, who is the QB coach over there in Philadelphia with Wentz, and then more importantly, Frank Reich, having him in place to be kind of like that steadying presence for Carson Wentz. One of the things with him, just in my time covering the Eagles, it kind of, and even afterwards, you know, just looking from afar and how things start to fall apart, he has a rather fragile psyche, you know, so confidence, like that's something that as an athlete, a lot of times you it can be damaged, but it could be uplifted by your coach. And Frank Reich does a really good job of just being able to instill confidence in guys. I've seen it firsthand with different players that, you know, he had in Philadelphia. So that, I think, right there is the main thing that they have going. The guy is not the same as he was pre-injury in 2017 and 16, but he's still a talented player. It's just all from the neck up with him. They have to make sure that that's right. And I think that position that he's in with the Colts and having Frank Reich is critical to that.
Yeah, I mean, few people are in a better position to analyze this than you, TD, as someone who – covered the Eagles and covered Wentz at his very best. And I think you broke it down well there. So if you had to guess right now, or even if you had to, you know, based on this move, you know, handicap the AFC South race, are you buying this? I mean, do you feel like this could push the Colts over the top? I mean, how do you assess, obviously not knowing what either of these two teams is going to do or lose or gain, but at this moment, who would you identify as the best team in this division?
You know what? I still have to identify the Titans as the best team in the division, and that's the offense. And I tell you this, back when that trade for Ryan Tannehill was made, who would have thought that that gave them what could be the top quarterback in the AFC South? No one would have thought that. But with this Deshaun Watson situation brewing, that very likely will be the case, that Ryan Tannehill is the best quarterback in the division. I think when you look at the offense, what Tannehill has done, you got Derrick Henry, you got A.J. Brown. I think that offense alone is enough to put them number one. And then you just have to expect the defense to get better. You have to. You really do. You have to. So I think looking at those together, that puts them as number one. The Colts situation is very intriguing. Their defense is one of the best in the league. Titans offense is one of the best in the league. So that's a pretty cool matchup. But I still go Titans number one in that division.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Teron, I want to get your thoughts on the Isaiah Wilson situation with the Titans. John Robinson made some comments on it earlier this week. Where do you think that stands right now with the Titans, and how close do you think they could be from moving on from Isaiah Wilson?
Yeah, I mean, there's a frustration level that you could just tell from John Robinson's press conference. You could just tell. And even some of the things that he said, right? You have to figure out if you want to do what it takes to be a football player. You know, that's essentially what he said. And even mentioning the and here's something that's interesting, right? He mentioned you have to be more than just having professional football player in your social media bio. Well, guess what was removed from Isaiah Wilson? My thing with him is he's tone deaf. You know, I don't think he really understands the way actions can be interpreted, right? And it can be interpreted both ways, for the good and for the bad. But for him, it's going to be interpreted for the bad because of the precedent that he has set. I mean, this guy reminds, I don't know if you've seen that movie Life, but there was a guy in the movie Life with Martin Lawrence and Bernie Mac and Eddie Murphy. And The guy's name was Can't Get Right. That's I think, what Isaiah Wilson's nickname needs to be, Can't Get Right, because he can't right now. And I think they're to that point where the frustration level has boiled over. And I'm sure that they're considering releasing him. I don't believe it will happen because of the guaranteed money. But Joe Corey was a guest, I believe it was on your show, and he had mentioned how, you know, that suspension for basically conduct detrimental, off the field stuff, that suspension that he had, that could be an area that will allow them to void the contract. And if they could void the contract, I think he gets released. But at the same time, I wonder if they would release a guy they invested such a high draft pick on only a year later.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I mean, certainly you feel better about it. If that's the case, if you can void those guarantees, obviously you're hurting less from doing it, but you still are giving up. Well, I mean, you're relenting on a first round pick, which is a huge draft investment, and you don't know for sure that he isn't going to figure it out somewhere else, right? That's the tricky part about this. But it seems to me, TD, like the next, you know, I didn't like hearing that they haven't talked directly. I don't think that's a good sign. Like you said, I think John Robinson had some strong words in there, including coming back unprompted on the social media stuff. Seems to me like it's, this is your chance. Show us, tell us, you know, apologize, work hard, come in shape, and maybe things can turn around. But it doesn't seem like there's a lot of optimism that Isaiah is going to respond like that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm glad you mentioned coming in shape, because, you know, here's the deal. That guy was not in shape last year. I remember the first week of camp and even into the second week, and I'm looking, and, I'm like, this guy is always on the ground. I watched him get into the stance. His butt is like 10 inches higher than everyone else, and it's not just because he's bigger than everyone else. It's because he's too tired to get down in his daggone stance. Now, if that frustrates me like that, imagine what Keith Carter, you know, what Coach Keith thought looking at this, right? Imagine what Coach Rabel thought looking at this. Imagine what John Robinson thought looking at this. So, you know, a lot of attention is being pointed towards the foolishness off the field. But even on the field, there was a high degree of frustration. And there were times where I saw Larrell Murchison just give him all of the business that he wanted during camp. And that's why I turned to Buck Rise and I told him in that second week of camp, I said, you could forget about getting any degree of contribution from that guy right there this year. Told him that in camp, and look what happened.
TD, I want to get your thoughts on the J.J. Watt situation, because John Robinson did confirm the other day that there's at least been contact on that front. And you know, all the lists that are out there are obviously going to include the Titans when it comes to a pass rusher out there. What do you think of J.J. Watt, maybe what his fit could be with the Titans? And if you're the Titans, what's the price tag that you're comfortable going to with J.J. Watt?
Yeah, I think the fit is absolutely there with the Titans. If you look at Jeffrey Simmons last year, he is an impact player, right? And he is a guy that's impactful, you know, a big-time guy on the front four. But watch how the season went. No slight on Jeffrey Simmons, but with Clowney in that lineup, that's when Simmons was really blowing up and doing his thing and establish himself as a force. I think if you put a guy like J.J. Watt in there, that's going to only help out a guy like Simmons. So that right there is a plus. I think really what you have to understand, if you sign him, you're not signing that guy that was back-to-back MVP. You know, that guy's gone. But you have to understand that he could still be someone to contribute and hold down a significant role, but he's not the lead guy. I think it's all about perspective. For me, that's why I think up to $10 million would probably be reasonable for them to do. And it's really, you know, it's commensurate with what he's done, you know, the past year and a half or so.
Would you invest something like that in him? How about this? Would you rather invest something like that in a J.J. Watt at this stage of his career, or a little bit more in someone like a Judon or, you know, or one of those guys who are more in their prime who are going to cost more? Because obviously you can't do both. Which way would you go if you were John Robinson?
You know, it's if you're going to invest that money, you have to invest it in the right guy. I think the right guy to invest that large amount of money in, he signed a couple years ago, is Za'Darius Smith. And I'm just going to keep bringing that up when asked about free agent edge guys. Yeah. But, you know, I wouldn't break the bank for any of these guys here because you could get a Carl Lawson who is very effective. You could get a Trey Hendrickson who's very effective. And I think, you know, you could go up another $2-3 million and that will get you that Trey Hendrickson guy who is a high motor player, is coming off 13 and a half sacks. All he needed was an opportunity to start consistently. And in his season where he was a full-time starter, you get those results. He would be an excellent pick. Romeo Okwara. These are all guys that I think, you know, they should look at a little bit more. And I would mix that in. You know, I've mentioned Marcus Golden as a secondary signing. Another guy, you know, watch the D4 situation. I know he has the back, you know, injury, but he's another guy that you get on a low risk, possible solid reward type of option just to have another guy to put in that 3-4 outside linebacker rotation. And he could put his hand in the dirt too. That's what you get with both of those guys. So to answer your question, I wouldn't like break the bank for one of the upper echelon guys, whether it's Matt Judon or even, you know, Bud Dupree. I think you have to, with caution, go up. I would probably go up to 12, 13 for a guy like that too. But I would go more with a quantity and quality approach because I think the quality difference is not big from a Judon to a Hendrickson to a Okwara, those types.
TD, last thing for you. We talked about this a little bit yesterday here on the show, but John Robinson's comments about Shane Bowen being promoted to defensive coordinator, talked about the continuity and what that brings to the table. And you were a guy that told us all along that Shane Bowen was probably the most likely guy to end up with that title, and he did. Mm-hmm. But we did talk about yesterday, you know, John Robinson had an opportunity to maybe come out and voice, you know, some stronger support for Shane Bowen and show some confidence in him, and he really didn't do it. Are we reading too much into that, or did you notice that as well in his press conference?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of extra reading into that. I personally believe that he actually made a very strong statement when he focused on the execution. And this is another thing that I said before. When you look at the execution and how he mentioned it goes beyond just the play call and it goes to the players on the field to execute. I've given this example over and over again. If Shane Bowen calls the right play and calls the right blitz or right stunt or anything like that, and the guy, everything is done right, and then they have the opportunity to bring the quarterback down and don't, is that on Shane Bowen or is that on the player? I think, you know, it actually goes to this. You have to have the guys who can supersede game plan and go beyond the X's and O's. And I think that's where the roster has to be further developed. And, you know, ultimately that falls on the personnel department, you know. So it's really a challenge, in my opinion, to them. And I think Robinson, in mentioning the execution from a player, is accepting that challenge and taking it upon himself to put Shane Bowen in a better situation as far as the DC and have better tools to use.
ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Nate and TD and Talking with TD, Teron Davenport has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. TD, great stuff as always, man. Hope you and the family are safe and have a great weekend here.
Yeah, appreciate it. Look, getting tongue-tied. Appreciate it. Likewise for you guys. And just real quick, we talked a bit about edge rushers. Got one on Talking with TD and Jonathan Cooper. There's interest from the Titans, and, you know, he played for Kerry Coombs at Ohio State. He actually was coached by Vrabel when he was a teenager at Ohio State camp. Two really funny stories that he had in there. So make sure you check it out. Got Cade Johnson, too, a Tyler Lockett-like receiver that could do it all. Small school guy. So check those out. And Chris Sanders, of course, run TMC.
Absolutely. Teron Davenport, our guest nice. Here on Robbie and Retro. Be good, TD.
All right, take it easy.
When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what TD had to say there and revisit the Shane Bowen discussion as well. Mike Vrabel with a kind of a Q&A last night with some season ticket holders and address Shane Bowen again. We'll react to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer. And who doesn't love free beer? Make sure you're tuning in all day today for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. We'll have that opportunity for you coming up a little bit later in the show today. Terry Crisp dropping by to begin the next segment at 8:30. And then David Ubben, our friend from The Athletic, at 9 o'clock for the latest on the Tennessee Volunteers. So a lot still to come there. Joe, we had Teron Davenport on in the last segment. What do you think of his comments about, you know, maybe in a way John Robinson admitting that he's accepting the challenge on a personnel standpoint and trying to put Shane Bowen in a better position to succeed this next season based on, you know, the players that they have and executing the calls to a higher degree?
Yeah, I mean, I think TD has a good point. You know, it's we talked about it before. Like reading into things can be, you can get a little carried away with it. And just like last year, you know, with the whole, I mean, he made it sound like he almost didn't care about Ryan Tannehill. And of course, he very much did care about Ryan Tannehill. So I think that's a good point by TD that when he talks about, when Robinson talked about the various things, which kind of came off, you could look at that as coach speakish or GM speakish, but it is at least putting some responsibility on that aspect of it, which is accurate. I mean, that's the thing about Bowen. Like, I understand everybody being upset about the Bowen hire. I do. I still think that I can't watch last year and say Bowen stinks and has no chance as a DC. I think it's absolutely fair that if it goes poorly this year, because we know they're going to have different personnel, then that move is going to be talked about more than anything. That's fair. That's how it is. That's fair. I don't have this certainty right now that Shane Bowen can't do the job. And there is a lot to it. There are different aspects, and I think TD's right. I mean, last year there were times, you know, they probably had the exact right call. Couldn't have called it better, and you didn't make the play. You got to have better players.
And speaking of Shane Bowen, Mike Vrabel was on a call last night, about a 45-minute call, part of a Q&A with some season ticket members on Zoom that the Titans did last night with Mike Keith and Amy Wells of the Titans as well. And Shane Bowen, of course, was brought up. And some interesting quotes from Mike Vrabel on that regard. Says, quote, "I think first and foremost, Shane is qualified and he's very intelligent. I think he communicates well, and I think he has a great vision for what we want to do." Vrabel said that he'll continue to be involved in the defense just like he is in all facets of the team. This comes from Jim Wyatt. And Vrabel also said, quote, "Nothing is really going to change. I'm still going to have an input on what I feel like is all three phases of our football team. I like being a part of all three phases, and that won't change. Shane is now going to have the title that everybody covets." So what did you think of those comments there, especially that last part by Mike Vrabel? Shane is now going to have the title that everybody covets.
Oh, yes. A little shot at those of us. I say, Vrabel, you should take title away from everybody and just say fun, happy coach for everybody and just, you know, do ring around the rosy and play some touch football. I mean, you know, who the heck would ever want to name someone a coordinator? That never happens in the NFL. So that was a good idea for him to do the talk with fans. Now, I'm trying to – was it our text thread last night? Is that right? I want to make sure I have this correct. We're a fan. So I want to understand what I saw here because this is a fan. And it looks like it's on Twitter. Oscar Perez, who says he better answer why he hired. And then in all caps, Shane bleepin' Bowen. So like, did Vrabel see that? Did Vrabel see that? No, okay. So that wasn't like, that wasn't part of the discussion. It's not like there was like a chat that was.
No,
all, it's
no,
not like when Vrabel, not like when Vrabel does stuff with us, and then you know there's like a there's two conversations going. What he's saying, and then little shots in the shit in the chat too.
No, he was not, you know, participating in the Zoom chat like he does with you.
Okay, well, anyway, that's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome find to see that. But I mean, fans are not happy with that. But that's the first, I mean, that's the first actual, you know, spoken word from Vrabel about Bowen. He said about what you'd expect, you know, but I mean, at least he did a thing with the fans. So good on him.
Good on him. And look, this is not a surprise, I think, to anyone. But I think if you were looking at the defense and maybe hoping that the operation was going to change to some degree, like, it doesn't look like it's going to change all that much. I mean, Vrabel obviously still going to be heavily involved. Shane Bowen now officially elevated to the title that everybody covets. I still love that last little shot that he threw in there. But, you know, this is going to be something that's continued to be talking about with Mike Vrabel. And look, you know, we talked about continuity obviously being the thing that Vrabel values. And he talked about that in this discussion last night. It says, quote, "The continuity is something that I always covet. We have to continue to push each other and we have to do some things differently. But continuity is something that I believe in. I believe in developing players. I believe in developing coaches." So that obviously in his actions has bared out that's been very important to Vrabel. And that continues to be the case here. Now, I think you're leaving yourself open to, if it doesn't work out, people are going to second guess it, which I realize that's the nature of the beast. And that's part of being a head coach in the NFL. But we've talked about how important continuity seems to be to Vrabel, and very strong words in confirming that last night.
Yeah, continuity is a great word. I mean, continuity, I think everybody wants continuity. I do think there's a balance in this league. You know, someone made the point this week about, like, the Eagles. You know, you have all the success, you lose all these people. You're not necessarily ready to lose all these people. Maybe you don't have exactly what you need internally, you know, to just keep promoting people, you know? I mean, you have to. So I think there's this balance of continuity, familiarity. I think, you know, I think that's an interesting point about that Vrabel throws in, is developing players. We don't think about that much in the NFL. You know, we don't think much about, like, this guy, how much better could this particular player get next year, right? I mean, basically it's like, you are what you are, and that's even now with quarterbacks in the league and how people look at them. But Vrabel's a big believer in that, and it does happen. It can happen. You know, and so if they have success and he keeps having success, then I think you're going to point to all this and say, see, it made sense to keep it in-house as much as possible, develop coaches, as he said that too, to be ready. You know, Ryan Crowe's going to be outside linebackers coach. You know, that's a big promotion. He was assistant special teams coach last year. He's now a defensive position coach. Is that a good move or a bad move? You know, we'll see. You know, you could make the case, maybe you should have gone out and got someone who has coached linebackers in the NFL before. They promoted from within. Vrabel has had, obviously, the Arthur Smith promotion is a great example of Vrabel knowing what he's doing there. But I also think that there maybe is a time when it's like, a fresh idea from outside, someone who's done something for a long time somewhere might also benefit you. So that was a very long diatribe about how, you know, I think so far it's worked out, but it doesn't guarantee that it will keep working out. And I think if you go to it too much, it can cost you.
When we come back, we'll switch gears and dive back into the Nashville Predators. Preds TV analyst Harry Crisp will join us. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Taken back away by the Blue Jackets and lofted in, and that will do it for this one. Final score from Columbus. The Blue Jackets score one per period and beat the Nashville Predators tonight 3-0.
Well, I think tonight we didn't capitalize on our chances. I actually thought we created a lot of chances, especially in the third period. We had a lot of chances. I think the games before, we didn't create enough. We didn't get pucks deep. We didn't manage to puck well enough. We didn't really create enough chances to even score. I didn't think it was a problem tonight. I thought we had enough chances to score. But the past couple games, that was definitely the issue.
Tough one last night for the Nashville Predators. They fall 3-0 at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and the frustration continues for this team offensively. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Scheduled to be joined shortly by Preds TV analyst Terry Crisp. So looking forward to that conversation, as we do every week here at 8:30 on Fridays here on Robbie and Rex Road with Crispy Joe. Just your initial impressions from the game last night for the Predators against Columbus, where it really was the same song and dance, not able to get anything going early on the game. And then you play okay in the third period, but just the lack of finish on this team, a huge problem right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe Crispy has a trying to watch the Preds score hangover. It can be a tough watch right now, man. I'll tell you what. And it's just, you know, even the comments post game. I mean, think about how much more of this season there is to go.
and
think about how many of those awesome Zoom pressers that you are going to enjoy, Robbie. If things don't change dramatically, which right now I have a hard time seeing them change. Although Ryan Porth, that was a very good stat Porth shared earlier on this team offensively and overall with and without Johansson. As much as we talk about Johansson and knock him for not doing enough, not doing more, not doing what he's capable of, because I think he's capable of a lot. Boy, he still makes an awfully big difference in this lineup, but it's just, 6-10-0, just struggling to get chances, struggling when they do get chances to finish chances. And I think the worst kind of team, losing team to watch is the kind that, you know, that can't do anything offensively in any sport. I'd rather, if I was a fan and I'm watching my losing team, I'd rather watch, like, if the Titans lost a bunch of close games last year, they still would have been fun to watch because they were scoring 30 a game, you know?
Right.
This team right now is it's tough. But getting Johansson back, which sounds like soon, if we want to be a little sunshiny, maybe that'll make a difference.
Well, and to that point, the stat that Porth read off earlier, Preds in games with Johansson, 2.8 goals per game. In the six games without him, they're 1.33 goals per game. And four of those games, they've scored one goal or less. So, you know, I realize you look at the stats, and Johansson's got four assists on the season, has not got a goal. So it's not like he's out there lighting it up offensively. But I think to Porth's point, you know, slotting people where they need to be in the lineup and not having guys like Callie Yarncroke in the top six or Luke Cunningham playing in the middle in the top six, like having people slotted where they need to be is a big deal. And this team is not going to be some offensive juggernaut, regardless of whether or not Ryan Johansson is in the lineup. But you can tell, like, with one injury, how big of a toll that takes on this forward group.
Yeah. So Nate, our good friend of the show, often tweets at us. He's listening to TD's comments about, you know, the players going to be on the scheme. And he asks on Twitter, a lot of Preds fans are wanting to fire Hines. How can we take the players going to be on the scheme comment to apply to the Preds? For one thing, on the second part of that, yeah, I mean, I think it's more players than scheme. I do. I just think scheme has limitations. I mean, everybody does some of the same things. And then there are variations within that. But it comes down to players playing a game that they've played their whole lives and beating, you know, the other side and making plays. And this whole wanting to fire Hines right now thing, to me, it just blows me away. Like, it's been a year, you know. And I understand, like, you know, at this point, it's like when a team goes the way the Preds are going and it looks like they're headed toward probably – you know, significantly changing the roster one way or the other. I understand there's like this fire someone, but I don't understand the fire Hines thing. Like, how could that be the path you take?
Well, I understand it. I mean, I understand why fans feel that way, because I mean, when everything's going wrong, like it is right now, fans are going to be mad about everything. So I understand that being a part of the discussion. But to your point, like, it just seems like everything is going wrong right now with this group. Personnel-wise, the guys that you need to be producing have not done it. And quite frankly, at this point, Joe, I think the sample size is long enough where you have to start questioning whether or not they're going to do it. Like, Johansson, I know he's hurt right now, and we've talked about how important he is to the makeup of this group, but he's not been as productive over the last year and a half as we had grown accustomed to him being. Matt Duchene, as well at times as I think he's played this year, he's not been as productive as he needs to be. He's not matching the production anywhere near good enough to what he's being paid out there. Philip Forsberg, even though I didn't think he was very good last night, he's been the one guy last year or this year that's played pretty well consistently. I mean, you know, Victor Arvidsson, we've talked about it. You know, there's 16 games in, Victor Arvidsson's got two goals. So this is a pretty significant sample size now with this group and with the guys that you need to be productive, where they just simply have not been productive. And I think the sample size is big enough at this point where if you're a Predators fan, you've got to look around and I think be realistic with yourself and say, it'd be hard to have much confidence that they're just all of a sudden going to figure it out.
Well, no, the fans have moved past that. The sure. fans are moving on to who's going to get fired, which, again, it's too early for that in any case. But, like, David Poile made a huge move, two huge moves. One, firing Laviolette, which, you know, I was surprised, but we've talked about it a million times. You know, I get it too. But then the other huge move is to go get Hines. And there were other more proven coaches, right? So I just, like, to me, if there's ire from fans, it should be on Poile and not Hines.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Alex texts in and says, Hines needs to be fired because we have had little, if any, improvement since we have transferred from Laviolette to him. The coach is doing less with more. I don't know if he's got more to operate with here in this discussion, but look, I get it. I mean, that's the results on the ice, both from a win-loss standpoint and from an offensive operation standpoint, which I think that's the genesis of a lot of the frustration that we're seeing right now is what's going on in the offensive zone. It's tough to watch, to your point, Joe. Like, I was watching that game at times last night, and it was difficult. Like I've watched more Nashville Predators hockey than most people, and I've been around here for a long time, watched this team since the beginning. This recent stretch they've been on has been some of the roughest offensive zone hockey that I've had to watch in a long time. Like, I'm harking back to the early Barry Trotz expansion team days, since it's been, I think, this rough to watch at times offensively. And it's not really showing any signs of getting better. And that, to me, I think that's where a lot of the frustration from the fans comes from with John Hines. Now, again, you can make the argument, okay, how much of that is on John Hines and how much of that is on the group? But, you know, it is, I think, if you're a fan, easy to point to the lack of production that they've had since the coaching change was made. We've read off some stats with some of the big guys like Victor Arvidsson and like Matt Duchene, like Ryan Johansson, whose production has gone down since that time. So I understand it from that regard.
So this is the roughest team to watch since...
Well, I mean, the 2013 team in the shortened season, I mean, the wheels just kind of fell off that year. It was a lockout shortened season. They ran through some injury problems. It was the first year without Ryan Suter, and Roman Josi was still very young. So that team hit a stretch halfway through that season in the condensed schedule where they just were not very good. And it's been largely pretty decent since then. Like, the next year was Barry Trotz's last year. They went on a run toward the end of the season, almost made the playoffs. And then Barry Trotz is fired. Peter Laviolette comes in, and we know what's happened since then. So it's been a lot of good since then, but this is certainly since 2013, offensively, this has been the roughest group to watch by far.
So does the impulse or the instinct of, okay, not gritty enough, let's switch it up and try to go back to that. I don't know if it's really – it's very much simplifying to say go back to, like, how we played under Barry Trotz, but is that the wrong instinct with this group of players?
Well, I think that's tough to answer because of this. I mean, you look at the group last year, certainly on paper, more talented than this group. I don't think there's really any way to dispute that at this point. But also, I don't think if you paid any attention to the team that you would deny that something needed to change with that group, because the way it was going was not good. Like, it's not like, you know, you got rid of Kyle Turris and Nick Bonino and Craig Smith and everything was rosy and everything was going in the right direction. Like, this team was trending in the wrong direction anyway. Now, did they go maybe too far the other direction and bring in too much grit and sacrifice too much offense in that process? I think that's a fair question. I think that's something that, as this season continues to unfold, we'll have a better answer of. But right now, I mean, I read it off earlier. They're scoring 2.19 goals per game. They're 29th in the league in the NHL. I mean, it's tough to win that way.
Yeah, so look, I think it's crazy. I understand, like, someone's got to be fired. Fire Keith Carter. Fire the special, you know, it happens. I get it. I think it's crazy to talk about firing John Hines. I'll also say, though, that I haven't been impressed, and I think that we talked earlier on the show, it seems like there is a lot of switching lines and throwing, and it, it, it feels like a coach just trying to say, well, how about this? How about this? How about this? You know, so, I mean, it's still like his accountability and on him to also try to figure this out too. I mean, this can't all just be the players. It's why you hire a coach to try to put them in the best position to succeed. And I'm not sure that's happened.
Coming up next, we'll continue this discussion on the other side of the break. How much longer can we watch what's going on with the Preds offensively before some changes have to be made? We'll discuss that next. Also, take your reaction as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How tired of you, if at all, are you? Just, you know, it just seems like the same old story with this team this season, with not being able to score and not being able to kill penalties. I mean, it, you know, as a voice of this team, are you tired of talking about it and tired of being in the middle of it?
Yeah, I think everyone is. It's frustrating. I mean, we all care a lot about this game and we all care about winning, and we're not winning right now. Like you said, there's a lot of things that we got to get better at. Yeah, we're not doing those things, and it's frustrating. I think everybody's tired of talking about those things. Everybody wants to change him, and the only way we can change him is it's up to us players. We got to be better, and that's the only way we can change it. I think talking about it, it's frustrating because you don't want to talk about it anymore. So you just want to. We need to go out there and change ourselves.
That was Predators captain Roman Josi after another loss for the Predators last night, 3-0 at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning. And Joe, Roman Josi, you know, typically a pretty relaxed guy. I mean, you can tell, I think, really with each passing press conference and with each passing game, the frustration not only just with him but with everybody in that locker room, I think, continuing to mount. And, you know, last night, you know, Roman Josi is never going to be a guy that's just out there screaming in the media, but last night probably as frustrated as you'll see him get with that response.
Yeah, it was a little, I mean, look, he had a lot of pressers last year that were sort of like, we got to be better. We got to figure it out. You know, searching for answers, not really having any, but that seemed to be a little bit, another level of not anger, but sort of resignation, I guess, in those comments a little bit. And, you know, Skrbina asked him how tired he is of this. I'm sure he's very tired of it. And again, like everyone, I mean, go project this 20 games down the road if nothing dramatic happens, you know? I mean, what are you talking about at some point? You're talking about the future of the franchise. Maybe you're talking about, maybe there is a youth movement if things get out of hand where you know you're not going to be in the postseason, and maybe you see some of those guys. But you're mostly just going to be sitting there talking about how is this going to get blown up, who's going to do it, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you're a player on that team, you can see that coming. I mean, you have to be able to see that coming.
We were talking in the last segment about the fans and the frustration right now being voiced towards John Hines. Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, Joe, they have no offensive structure. Nobody attacks the net. All they do is send the puck around the boards. What do you think of that? And we've talked a lot this week, Joe, about the offensive system, the structure, what they're trying to get done in the offensive zone, and none of it, from the system part of it to the players executing on their own and reading and reacting, seems to be working right now. And another case of that last night where you get shut out in a game that against a team that's been struggling defensively, giving up more than, you know, 4.5 goals a game over their last little stretch here. And the Predators, even though they did have a couple of chances last night that you feel good about, just not anywhere near often enough. And when you get them, there's been no finish to this team lately.
Yeah, I'm not smart enough to figure this out, okay? Like, I know that John Hines is smart and has spent his life in hockey and spends hours every day trying to figure this out, and that there's some guys on this team who have had success in this game before. And we heard a lot of different comments this week. I mean, I think we've had a really robust discussion about all this with some different thoughts, you know. Dan Hynote talking about system to a point, then blank canvas. Is it too blank? Should there be more system involved? You know, Matt Duchene talking about trust, talking about confidence on an individual level, and then also like with guys, you know, on their lines, and even just, you know, the five-man collective in the offensive zone. Is John Hines mixing and matching too much. You know, I think all of it, you blend it all together, and it's just a very tough to watch product right now. I don't know what the answer is. I think it's simplistic to just put it all on coaching, though.
Well, I think it is too, but that's got to be a factor in this as well. And I think we would all agree that it's at least a factor. And when you look at the system right now, I mean, look, it doesn't look like they've got a plan out there offensively. Like I watch other teams get in the offensive zone, and you know it doesn't always work. And a lot of hockey, like I said, is reading and reacting and making the plays that are available to you in front of you, and not trying to force those ridiculously high skilled plays if you don't have the personnel to pull it off. But I mean, it just looks like right now when you watch other teams play, whether it's in transition or whether it's when you get set up in the offensive zone, there's a plan. There's an objective that they're trying to accomplish out there, whether it's crashing the net, whether it's trying to generate some passes into the slot and get shots off that way. And right now I watch the Predators offensively, and I, you know, from shift to shift, I don't really know what they're trying to do out there. And that to me is the most concerning thing is, you know, it's one thing if you're getting to a certain area and you're trying to get some chances that way and you get them from time to time and they're just not falling for you. Like, I think you can live with that if you're a fan out there. But right now it just seems like this team has no sense of direction offensively. When there are opportunities for plays to be made one-on-one, they're not winning those battles often enough, both on the wall to keep the puck in the zone and when they've got the puck on their stick and trying to create plays to get to the net that way. There's a lot going wrong with this team in the offensive zone. And we've talked about and highlighted the importance of trust and the confidence that it takes to play that way in the offensive zone. And, you know, as the games continue to go by here, it's hard for me to imagine that the confidence is getting any better. Like it seems to me like the confidence is almost getting worse out there at this point.
Okay. So I'll serve you up a blame pie and we can make it banana pudding flavored if you want. That's a good flavor.
Thank you.
That's a good flavor for blaming people for something going wrong.
Was unnecessary.
So you have to split it in half. So not in half, but you have one cut. So how much of this goes to the talent that David Poile has put together in this team, and how much of this goes to John Hines and what he's done as a coach this year?
I mean, I think it's a very interesting question. I would still give the edge to the talent. I don't know exactly what percentage it would be, because I do think that this team is talented enough to be better than they have been offensively. Like this team, and I've said it many times, it was never going to be an offensive juggernaut. It also should not be 29th in the NHL in goals per game. And I realize it's not just 5-on-5 play that goes into that. It's special teams as well. And that's been an area that they've struggled for a long time this year. Not in this year, but really the last 2 or 3 years, the power play has been a big issue. So I realize that's part of the equation as well. But I would still give the edge to the talent and the players that have been out there just based on the sample size. Like it's not like this is a completely different conversation than we had when Peter Laviolette was the coach last year. Like the first part of the season last year until he was fired, we were talking about players underperforming and not living up to the contracts that they had signed and not having the production that you thought they could. Now, it has not gotten any better, and you can make an argument in some cases that it's gotten worse under John Hines. So he does not skate away from this blameless in my mind. And quite frankly, the more I watch this team play, I think the more blame I'm starting to divvy up to John Hines in this process. But I would still give the edge to the players right now in terms of where I'm slicing the most blame.
So he's still got a big healthy slice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the bottom line is it all tastes bad, like banana pudding does. So, you know,
it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous opinion.
So here's my next question. So if Peter Laviolette were coaching this exact group, what would they be right now through 16 games?
They wouldn't be this bad. They probably wouldn't be this bad, but it's not. Are they top four in the division? I'd have a hard time believing that they're top four in the division either. So I've made my thoughts on Laviolette clear. Like I think that dude's got a shelf life, and I think he absolutely reached it here with the Predators. So would they be better? Maybe. I mean, they may not be this bad offensively, but I don't think that, you know, Peter Laviolette being the coach of this team right now makes them a top three or top four team in the Central. Like, I just don't think this roster right now is very good.
Okay, so it's well documented, you know, going back to especially like Turris and all, you know, moves that David Poile has made that haven't worked out. So are we at this point, because again, I reject fire Hines from fans right now. I just think that's not realistic. But are we counting that choice as a bad David Poile move right now?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you could look at it as good right now. I think the answer that I would still give is it's incomplete at this point. But I'll say this. I felt heading into this season that this was when the clock really starts on John Hines in terms of the evaluation period. And so it's difficult for me to sit here, you know, 16 games into that evaluation period and start, you know, throwing a bunch of blame at the coaching staff and John Hines. But at some point, you've got to demonstrate some ability to get better and to pull a team out of this. And right now, we haven't seen much of that from John Hines. So, again, I'm not willing to pull the plug at this point, like I know a lot of fans are on John Hines, but there does need to be at some point along the line here an ability and a demonstrated ability to pull the team out. And we have not seen that.
Yeah, real soon, I would say. You know, yeah. like I mean, it's going to, you know, get to the point where people are just tuning out on this team. Like you've got to, there may be 40 games left, but there's about, I don't know, 6 to 8 games where you better start showing something very different.
Yeah, and they don't have a whole lot of time left to get that done. And they'll be back in action tomorrow against Columbus, taking on Detroit next week on the road before they're back home as well. 3 just monster games coming up for the Nashville Predators. They've got to find a way to dig themselves out of this. And speaking of next week against Detroit, when the Preds have a weekday game this season, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in that game that night, you win a prize pack. And the next chance to participate is Tuesday morning at 8:45. So make sure you're tuned in for that. When we come back, we'll be joined by David Ubben from The Athletic. We'll get into the latest with the Tennessee Volunteers with him. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.